Hello, and welcome to a bonus episode of Asians Represent. I'm Daniel Kwan, and I'm one of the hosts of this podcast. Now, this episode is all about micro-RPGs, and in particular, one creator of them, Ben Chong. Now, before I get into this, just a couple of announcements. First things first, Agatha's Kickstarter for Hearts of Wulin is still going on. So you can fund it. Now, it was funded in the first day, and I am super proud of our community for helping make that happen. So way to go. But there are still some stretch goals to be met, so head to our social media where you'll find the links to Hearts of Wulin. Second, I'm back from D&D Live. That was an incredible experience, and I'm so thankful for Victoria Rogers of the Broadswords for, you know, bringing me out. And, you know, for the community members and fans of the show who I got to meet at this event, it was so inspiring that, in fact, we are starting our own D&D actual play. And I will get into why, and one of the big issues is representation. But we're going to start producing some Dungeons & Dragons content. And if we're going to do that, we're going to need a title for the series. And that's going to be up to you. So head to our social medias at AZNS Represent and, you know, shoot us some ideas for what we should call these series, because instead of having, you know, masks at the beginning of the month, you know, a discussion based episode, an interview episode at the middle of the month, and then a bonus episode at the end of the month. I think we need to actually have names for these episodes. So, what I want to do is have sort of an indie actual play at the beginning of the month, a discussion-based episode at the middle of the month, and a D&D actual play at the end of the month. But in order to do that, we need three distinct titles, and then we're going to have to commission three new Asians Represent logos. So if you have an idea for a title, or if you are a graphic designer or illustrator, let us know, send us your portfolio, and we'll get in touch. Our featured creator for this episode, like I said earlier, is Ben Chong. Now, Ben is a tabletop game designer, a game dev lecturer at KDU Creative, and an all-around amazing and influential designer based in Malaysia. This was an incredible conversation, and I was actually joined by one of our Masks New Shambhala cast members, Amar, for this interview. And I think Amar did an incredible job conducting the interview with me. So please give it up for Ben Chong and our guest interviewer, Amar. So, I mean, welcome to Asians Represent. I mean, this has been a long time coming, and this is the first episode of the show that's actually co-hosted with Amar.
Hello.
Yeah. So what we're trying to do with Asians Represent is we're trying to bring in new perspectives. We're trying to draw from our team. People obviously love Amar. when I was at D&D Live, so I'm still kind of jet lagged. Mm-hmm. Came back yesterday afternoon. But when I was at D&D Live, people were talking about you.
Wow.
Yeah. People actually really like the character. People like, you know, you just how you conduct yourself at the table.
Oh.
And so people are like really excited. And when I said that, you know, we're going to do something D&D, they were like, I hope Amar's in it. So it's great. So
you can't see it on screen, but I am blushing right now.
Yes.
Very sweet.
And thank you. You know, Ben and I were joking before you came that this would be, you know, an episode of Asians Represent where, you know, three very handsome Asian men with deep voices talk about RPGs. So we're gonna break the media mold of, you know, Asian men, you know, having like high pitched voices and, you know, being sort of beta characters, and we're just gonna be deep-voiced Asian men talking about games.
Yeah, as long as we're still talking about nerd stuff.
Yeah, oh yeah, we're 100% talking about nerd stuff because that's what this show's all about. But Ben, we have been, you know, talking online for a while, like pretty regularly, to be honest.
Yeah, like a lot.
And a lot, and like through the magic of Twitter, where all RPGs go. And you're one of those people who I have wanted to have on the show for a long time. A, because you're working in, you know, game dev as a teacher, but you're also a designer, and you design like really interesting games. And in the future, we're going to do an actual play of us playing one of your games, Magic Swords. Mm-hmm. But we felt like today would have been better to just do a get to know you, kind of talk about your process, you know, your experience with the scene in Malaysia. And what I really want to talk about is your experience using Itch.io as a platform, because that's been your primary platform for putting your work out there.
Yeah, it really has been. I remember in the beginning, I was thinking I would go through DriveThruRPG, and I think I did sign up for an account, and I just kind of let dust settle, and it's just been there for a long time. And I found out about Itch.io, and I found out about Emotional Mac Jam, I think. And then so I just started posting more work there, and it started working out really well. And I'm just like, I guess I'm here now. It's just gonna be this for a long time now.
Yeah, you've posted you've uploaded 9 games on Itch.io.
I think it's am I at 10 now? I have no idea.
Is it 10? I think you're at 9. So you got They Won't Go When I Go, Sandwich County, Napkin Witch, Beyond Human, Monolock, By Their Grace, By Their Blood, How the Goblin Stole Grunchmas, Magic Swords, and Hello World.
Is that 9?
Yeah, that's 9. And that's at swordsandflowers.itch.io. And swords-and-flowers.itch.io. But yeah, you've been, very proactive about putting out new content, but also the kind of content that you post and the kind of topics you talk about on Twitter are they seem very authentic, very you. Having not met you in person, I get a very good sense of who you are and what you like out of your games.
Oh, not I'm blushing. I mean, it took a lot. Honestly, it took a lot of trial and error when people say, I've had this before where people were like, oh, your Twitter is very authentic. Your brand seems very you. Everything seems so, I don't think they say cohesive, but they say it seems like it's developed. And I mean, they kind of think that I kind of came into this suddenly, but I've been on Twitter for many, many years. And my backstory was that I was working in social media for a good chunk of my career so far. I think 3 whole years I was working with social media related stuff. So it took a long time to kind of naturally come into this, just randomly. I think the turning point was when I swapped my name from One Root Flowers into Swords and Flowers.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, cause you're you've tweeted almost twice as much as me. You have almost twice as many tweets as me, and there are times when I feel like, man, I'm over tweeting. On Sunday night, I was just sitting in bed. I'm just you know what? I'm just gonna tweet about eating cookies and playing Final Fantasy on my Game Boy Advance. And I was that felt a lot. I still feel I tweet too much if I tweet 4 times a day.
I don't know about that. As somebody who's tweeted, I think 5 times in total, I really look up to both of you for, like you said, the authenticity the sort of sense of yourselves that you bring out into social media, especially with Daniel, having met him in person. He is like he appears in Twitter, which is a totally solid person.
Mm-hmm. Also, you've tweeted 105 times.
Whoa.
Say off by 100. I mean, I think this is what's cool about Asians Represent is we're getting people all over the world. I mean, you know what's interesting? So when I was at D&D Live, I was talking about all of the people around the world, and Victoria from the Broadswords and I were talking. We were like, okay, what would we do different next year? And I was like, yo, I bring all my homies from Southeast Asia over to the US.
Oh my God.
And we'll do a big Asian sort of section of D&D Live.
Cool.
Right? We do an Asians Represent live show.
Yes.
Right? And I was I know all these people. And I actually talked about you, Ben, and I was like, yo,
Swords of Flowers.
Like Kai Rule, right? Yep. All these people who A, we've had on the show, and B, we will have on the show, Ben, you're now on the show. And C, are making a difference in their community, but nobody really knows about it. I was like, well, the world needs to know about the Southeast Asian RPG industry, because more than really anywhere else in Asia that I know of, Southeast Asia in particular has a very vocal community that's having a big impact in North America. Like, yeah, like, do you have any insight into that? Because, like, that's something I've been wondering about.
So, I mean, there's a long story about it, but, like, honestly, I'm still surprised sometimes because I'm still surprised. I'm still very surprised because how do I go about this? RPG SEA, which is sort of the official, like, the sort of, like, official group coalition we have between Singapore, Malaysia, and the Philippines. Okay. We all have multiple creators. You can probably look them up online very easily. Curious and Chimeras in Singapore, Gamers and GMs in Philippines, and then we have Role Playing Gamers of Malaysia, or Kaki Tabletop, which means Kaki means leg, which is also sort of like Kaki also sort of means like people or friend or the people you bring along. So we would say like Kaki Lang, which I think is Hokkien. I can't remember. Yeah. So we were all these kind of like thriving communities in very different ways. Curious and Chimeras was doing workshops. Gamers and GMs hold like insane amounts of workshops and conventions all over like Metro Manila. And then there was Kaki Tabletop, where we did conventions as well and were a community. And the three of us kind of found each other. And we sort of just made a coalition called RGSEA. And it kind of just went from there. It's very hard to pinpoint when it happened, but the moment we started putting games on itch.io, and it kind of just exploded for like a lot of us. People started finding our games. We started getting a lot more vocal, and yeah, and then we kind of just came here like out of nowhere. So, but also when you say that we have an effect on North America or America in general, I get very surprised because from my perspective, all I see is just us putting games online and, you know, talking about role-playing games. Yeah.
I mean, when I see North America, I mean, like, you've had a profound effect on, like, you and your whole community has had a profound effect on, you know, how I look at RPGs and what I see. Like, I wrote that article for Gnomes Do, right? And I was like, okay, tabletop game creators, you need to follow. I was like, and, like, you were one of them, right? And, oh, no, I didn't. Yeah, I put you in it. And I was like, hey, these are the people. I was like, okay, Ben, first one. Right? Because you're writing these like really interesting games that I had never thought about. First of all, like Magic Swords, the reason why I wanted to play it is because A, it's a dope idea. Like it's kind of like reverse D&D. You're playing as the weapon. And Amar and I were kind of talking on the phone. And Amar was like, well, you know, you could be like the Talwar, like Jungir's sword in masks. How meta is that? And like I could be like a Chinese sword. Yeah. Like, that'd be so cool. But then I mean, there's one like Meng Kao, like Thousand Islands, everybody talks about. Everybody talks about. Because
Meng Kao's work is freaking fantastic. It's
amazing.
Yeah. Like Meng Kao with Zedek, just both of them together, their stuff is so damn good. It's so good.
Right. And then people here notice that and talk about it. And so what people think of, you know, Asian RPGs that like often like I've heard people talk about Thousand Islands just because it's so beautiful. It's like it's world building and that's what people want. And you're producing like awesome independent stuff and showing people that A, you can have a voice for yourself and B, you can make use of a platform like itch.io to the sort of push your designs out into the space.
Yeah, like I feel like at some point when I start putting my games up as well, it slowly encouraged a lot of others to do as well. So when I put it up, Bubblegum Sam, you might know him, Samwise Mui, he makes games as well and he pushes it out there, but he doesn't publish all the things he makes. So whenever I publish things, I see that he has a game idea, I kind of just like, I'll just DM him and I'm just like, hey, just put your game out there. It's good. Just put it out there. It's really, really good. People want it. So it's like a mix of things, right? Like we all kind of support each other. It's a bit of a network. But yeah, like it's hard to pinpoint, but like in 2019 specifically, there's been a huge growth for all of us. Like if you look up other designers like Jammy, who is Sword Queen Games, she makes these freaking fantastic, beautiful game, super evocative. They use tarot cards, they use spirits. It's really, really, really beautiful games. We have Sim Posadas, who does Diwata games, I think, who makes plant-based games. Like, just all of us are slowly kind of putting our works out there, and we are noticing that people are looking at our works. But at the same time, we didn't really, I don't think any of us have really reckoned or consolidated how big of an effect it's having on certain people or how people are really viewing our stuff. And then you suddenly just get people on Twitter talking about this. And then all of us are just like, oh my goodness. Oh, thank you so much. I didn't expect this. Oh, no worries. Thank you. But yeah, like I was surprised as well when you featured me on Gnomestube, because I'll be honest, I was really, really surprised. I mean, really? I was happy. Yeah, I was honestly very surprised, but I was very happy about it.
I mean, like for me, like I'm all about making sure everybody like gets an opportunity. Like when Amar and I first met,
yep,
it was like over a year ago.
Yep.
And it was through like our mutual friend Anderson. And he was like, "Yo, you gotta meet Amar. Amar's cool." And we started talking.
Yeah.
And we just hit it off immediately.
Yeah. Anderson actually got tired of me messaging him every time you and I would hang out. I'd be like, "I really like that guy."
and like, so we started talking. It was just like, "Yo, we gotta do something."
Yes.
And literally the first day we met, we were like, "We gotta do a panel next Breakout Con." I knew right away that I liked you. And I knew right away that you were somebody that I wanted to work with. And the next Breakout Con, we did that panel.
It was awesome. I mean, if I can give my side of this, I'm sort of still relatively new to the gaming side of things. I met Daniel, and there is sort of this effect of meeting somebody who creates something that you really admire. And maybe you don't really think of yourself ever creating something like that. And I met Daniel, and he was talking about Ross Rifles, his World War One Powered by the Apocalypse game. And I was like, wait, this is a real game creator that I'm talking to. He can do this. And you've been so open about the process and so forth. I was like, this is actually something I could maybe do. And so I am actually working on a game, which is currently
secret.
Ooh, okay.
It's secret mostly because I feel very uncomfortable talking about my creative ideas.
But it's also, and I'll say this, it's also a dope idea that I don't want anybody stealing.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate
it. It's the kind of idea that could blow up on Kickstarter. I'll hype you up.
Thank you. Yeah, now I'm blushing yet again. Meeting Daniel has been just so great, partly because he really does, walk the talk about building people up, sort of raising everybody up at the same time. And Ben, it sounds like you've got kind of a group like that in Malaysia right now. You were saying that you can't quite figure out the exact tipping point, but it seemed like when you got together with two other people, it sort of really started to gel and work in a way that it sort of didn't quite before then. Can you tell me a little bit more about that moment?
Yeah, so there's actually a very, very long history and build up because I think when people tend to look at my career and how I do things, when I got to become a lecturer at KDU for game development, people were like, "Wow, you got like your dream job. Like, how do you do it? Like, just land on your lap or something. It just happened this year." Like, they say it like it's sudden. But there was, I think the history, at least from, if we really roll back into it, from the beginning of when it boomed in Malaysia, especially, it was about maybe 3 years ago. So you'll see these people on Twitter. I'll talk about them a lot, but Gray or Graham, you probably know him. It's Grill on Twitter. When he came back from the UK in like 3 years ago, he wanted to start an RPG scene. So he started something called Role Playing Gamers Union Malaysia, which later became Role Playing Gamers of Malaysia. I joined them. We did a few convention gigs. We went to some events and we started doing a lot of grassroots stuff. It got very, very big. And then we started working together for a long time. So Gray is my mentor. He mentored me for, I think, about like 2 years. And then we kind of just, we didn't go our separate ways, but we started doing things a lot more rigorously by ourselves because we were trained enough to do it. And kind of like, long story short, we ended up working with a lot of very, very different people, one of them being KDU. That's also what contributed to me getting hired by them, because I've been working with them for quite some time at conventions. They knew I make games. So they were like, "Hey, you make analog games. We are looking for a person who can do analog games. So would you like to come in?" And I kind of just went like, "Yeah, of course. Why wouldn't I?" "Cool. Okay, let's get in with it." And there's a really funny story to it, because I was really nervous because I only make analog games. And the game development course was, you can see that there's a focus on video games as well, but in general, it's all about game design, game tech, and game art. When I went in there and I finished my interview, I sat down in the office and we were talking about academic briefing. So I wasn't in the staff yet, but they wanted me to sit in on the briefing to like see their process. And on the on the class schedules for the next semester, I just finished my interview. On the class schedule, I just pointed out the cell. It's like, is that my name? And we're like, yeah, we put you in the schedule already. Like, we're planning for this. They're like, how long was this in planning? But yeah, like it kind of like the tipping point is it's hard to know this because it was so much work before it. And then, you know, you get specific revelations that come up, and it's not really a tipping point, it's just a development.
Yeah.
One of them being that role-playing gamers in Malaysia we formed other groups over here. Card Game Malaysia, Board Game Malaysia, and then it became Kaki Tabletop. And then that led Greg going to Singapore. He went there to talk about Kaki Tabletop with other communities there. He met Curious and Chimeras, which is the Singaporean group, and they got together. And then the Philippines got involved because the Singaporeans knows the Filipinos, and then we all got together, and then we were like, hey, there's like a surprising amount of us in like this trifecta in Southeast Asia, so like, should we make a group? And we were like, okay, we'll make a group, I guess, yeah, like things just organically happen, and yep. When the Philippines got in, it honestly surprised me because I had never known that the Philippines had a community. I kind of guessed they probably have an RPG community there, but I didn't know how big they were. They're like thousands strong.
Okay. Yeah.
They have multiple people over there. They have Gamers and GMs Philippines, which host lots of events all over Philippines. And they don't just do like small events. These are like conventions that involve corporates. They do charity events that raise money. They do mega LARPs. They have like lots of public one shots. They do something called TTRPG breakfast where they eat together in the mornings. That's not the only group. They have Greasy Snitches who do lots of public games as well. They have their own podcast, I think. I forget. They have their own creators as well. And then there's also the craziest thing over there is that there's a person named, I think, Eliza. I forgot the brand, but they make and craft their own dice and sell the conventions for the community. And every single dice is hand casted and handcrafted. Yeah.
Ooh, nice. We're actually speaking of like handmade dice.
Yeah, like full on handmade.
Yeah, we're doing an episode on handmade dice next month.
Ooh,
very
ooh,
cool. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, June for Asians Represent is going to be D&D month.
Very cool.
It's gonna be D&D month. Yeah, that's my plan right now. It's gonna be sweet.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice. I love dice. But yeah, like it's really hard to pinpoint because it's a long timeline and history of things just building up, and it doesn't feel like there was a tipping point because it always felt like the growth was just it kept going. There wasn't a part where it just boomed and it went really really big like exponentially. Right. It just kind of grew and it just kept on getting bigger. So it's odd looking back because it's a very unique line of events and histories. Like even with, I talked about it sometimes on Twitter, the Kaki Tabletop North trip, which we had in 2016, where me and Gray just went, you know what? We need to meet other RPG people. We know these people on Facebook. Let's go and take a trip and meet them. So we went through like several different states. I think on the left side of Malaysia, they call it the north-south coast or something like that. It's a north-south line on the left side. We went all the way up to Perlis, and that's how we met Kyrol.
Kyrol is great.
Kyrol's amazing. Kyrol's teaching English using RPGs. Like, when I went up there and saw him, I was freaking out because there was just a table full of like really, really cool RPG stuff. Students were there in the hall with us, and getting to talk to them just... like, it really just opens up your mind when you meet somebody else in the same place as you who's doing... almost the same things, but you're also doing really, really cool different things at the same time. It was so awesome to like really, really meet it. That I can probably see that as a tipping point, Kaki Tabletop North trip. But after that, it was just exponential. It just kept going by itself.
I mean, when you have a community like that who kind of, you know, can get behind you and you know, kind of lift you up and, you know, everybody else alongside them, it makes so much sense to see the amount of momentum that you have right now, like individually, you know, career wise, but also as a community. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're doing some amazing stuff, and I know I'm just going to keep saying, "Oh, you're awesome! Uh-huh. Keep doing what you're doing." But I mean, this is the kind of story that we want people to listen to. Mm-hmm. Like, I was talking to somebody at at D&D Live, and he said, what do you do? Because he saw my badge. So all of our badges, like no matter who, like what show we were or anything like that, our badges just said talent on them. They didn't say our name or what we were doing. Mm-hmm. And he asked me, he's like, oh, what are you here for? And I was like, oh, yeah, I host a podcast. And this is before I had met any fans of the show while I was there.
Yep.
He's like, oh, like what is it? I was like, oh, Asians Represent. He's like, what was that? It's like, you know, we highlight the contributions of Asian creators. And he was like, oh, kind of picked a bad subject. And I was like, what? And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, I mean, like, who's going to listen to that? I'm like, literally thousands of people.
Yep.
But I didn't say it that way. I said, oh, you know, like, we do well.
Yeah.
Because he assumed that this show is only for Asian people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. Right?
I got feelings.
Right?
Yeah.
I've gotten that attitude before, too, where it's like, why would you sub-niche within an already kind of tiny niche, right? It's like, why would you go to do, like, Asian people within tabletop role-playing games in North America? That's already a tiny slice of a tiny pie. And my response is like, no, our niche represents 2.5-3 billion people, something like that,
yeah. Right?
This is just going to keep growing.
And right, if we can, like, I think a good part of our listenership are not Asian.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they listen to the show because A, we have something to say.
Yep.
I think not just you, myself, Agatha, Jay, but like every single one of our guests has mm-hmm. something to say, but they're also looking for ways in which they can better represent and respect our cultures in their games.
Mm-hmm.
And we provide them with that knowledge.
Yep.
But yeah, also they're looking for something new.
Yeah.
Right. If you're listening to this podcast and you have, you know, never played a game where you play as the weapon, as the sword,
yeah.
Well, you're listening to the author of a game that does that.
Yeah. That's such a
not me, not Amar. It's Ben.
Yeah, like it surprises me so much when a person can say, like, you know, I'm not interested. Like the person you interacted with, like who's going to listen to a podcast about Asian things? It's like, I mean, have you seen the History Channel? You know, like it's been like yeah. that for years. It's you who isn't interested in like other cultures. Like, don't confuse what you're feeling with the rest of like. But like yeah, like people are so interested in discovering new things, so it doesn't really make sense to not want it. And I don't know, like that. Like the idea that we are a niche market gets me like riled up because it's like, I have to explain them. That's the one part, right, where it's like, we have so many people who look like us who want to listen to this stuff. That's one part.
Mm-hmm.
But also the point of going for this niche market is that we want to open it up for other people. We are willingly opening our hearts to share with people. And people just come in like, oh, but you know, nobody's going to listen to it. Like, we exist though. We're thriving. You know, we are living proof that it works. So like, why would you ever think like that? Unless of course you don't have the exposure, which would explain everything.
Yeah, and I mean, a part of this whole podcast is just to give other people exposure.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the whole thing. It's like
highlight creators, people working in the field.
Yeah, exactly. Show everybody else all the awesome people that we know.
Mm-hmm.
Like I hype you up all the time, Ben.
Oh, and
online. But like now we have a chance to hype you up even more, like through this episode in any way we can.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It would honestly be so awesome if we could go to a convention in Asia
mm-hmm.
and just all of us just gather and congregate at one mega convention.
Mm-hmm.
In Singapore, because I really want to go to Singapore.
Oh, oh my gosh. Malaysians will kill me if I say this, but I'll be very honest. Singapore is a very nice city to travel to. It's really, really pretty. It's really nice. It's very nice to walk. It's so mm-hmm. good. Yeah.
Like it looks so clean and the food. I've just heard so many good things about the food there. Oh my God.
But do they have shawarmas?
We do.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. Amar's okay. There.
I'm getting a flight to
Singapore.
Come to Malaysia. Come to Malaysia. If I don't say Malaysia, I'm going to get hunted down. Come to Malaysia. We have better food. We always have better food.
I'll go anywhere in Asia just to like try new food, meet new people, and like play games. Like, that would be that would be such a good show, just like traveling around the world, mm-hmm. eating food mm-hmm. with game designers in other countries and then playing their games.
Yep.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's gonna be like Anthony Bourdain, except you go to different Asian countries just to play different D&D.
Yeah, like rest in peace, Anthony Bourdain. Like I loved Anthony Bourdain. Yeah. And everything that he did and the way he talked and the way he wrote.
Yep.
He was so honest.
God,
And respectful. That was a thing. He was like a white dude traveling to all these countries, but he was just so fucking respectful of everybody.
And he understood.
I think the one thing he understood that most people don't get is that when you go to Asia, the real food is the street food.
Yeah.
He understood that so well. And mm-hmm. like the common person's food mm-hmm. is what you have to eat. Yeah. He got that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. I mean, like, okay, we're getting sidetracked because we're talking about food.
No, we're all going to be hungry.
Well, food is such an amazing, window or dimension into a culture, into understanding that culture in so many different ways that I feel like it's kind of hard not to get really, really, interested in a culture without really getting interested or invested in the food as well.
That's true. And I mean, like, speaking of food, I have to ask. Tell me about Sandwich County.
Oh.
let me just put this out there before the listeners who don't know what Sandwich County is. Sandwich County is a sandwich making RPG. Okay. So I'm just going to stop there. I don't want to let you explain it to everybody. What is Sandwich County?
Wait, is this like that D20 burger that you can get at that Stormcrow?
At the Stormcrow?
Yeah.
I love how you say it, at that Stormcrow. Like, you don't go there all the time.
All right. Okay, fine. You don't have to tell everybody.
I'll call you out on that.
I went there 6 times in 1 week when they first opened.
Yeah, I know.
I feel like I've heard about this Stormcrow before. I don't know why. Like, the D20 burger. I feel like I've heard about this before.
I think you might have. So Stormcrow is a chain of gastro pubs in Canada. Their original locations were in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. They're super cool. They opened up one in Toronto, and it's like much nicer than the original ones.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
And you can go and you can play D&D there. You can eat game themed food, and they have different themed rooms. It's really nice.
Yeah.
They did this one thing, though, where they were like, you can come and do like a dinner and game and we'll have a GM for you to play. But then they hired all older white dudes.
Yeah.
That's not going to go well.
Yeah.
Sandwich County.
Yeah, let's go to Sandwich County. I want to know about this.
Yeah. Just for one quick reference. So for the D20 burger, it's you roll on a ingredient table for your toppings for the burger.
And your meat and everything.
Yeah, everything. And then they also have a shot table. So you roll your D20 on to get different kinds of shots.
Oh my God, yes.
A critical miss, one, the ingredients, it's called Tiamat's Bile, and its ingredients are tequila, Tabasco, hot sauce, and Tiamat's Bile. It's absolutely disgusting, from what I've been told, because I've never rolled that low, of course.
Yeah. But anyway, tell us about Sandwich County, now that we have context on what Amar was referencing with the D20 burger.
I'm just thinking about spicy tequila now. Sandwich County. So Sandwich County has a really funny story behind it, and it's got like a weird, weird dark backstory as well. Sandwich County was made for the Cozy Game Jam, which was a game jam, I think by Riverhouse Games, maybe, I forget, but it was all about how we were trying to make games that involved coziness as a concept. But not just coziness, like if you really read deeply into the articles inspired by it, it was about games that don't force or put players in positions of discomfort, right? And so when I was gonna make it, my brain was like, how do I make a game that's like super comfy? And I was making, I think I was making a sandwich when I thought it out. I was actually making like a peanut butter sandwich, and I was like, it'd be kind of funny if I like made a game that could force people to make sandwiches, because that'd be kind of funny. And then, I made Sandwich County, it's infamous because I made it 2 hours, in 2 hours, 4 hours before the deadline. Mm-hmm. So it took me, a good 1 hour just to figure out its beginning, the beginning kind of like nursery rhyme that goes into it. It took me an hour to figure that out. But the rest just kind of loading really, really, really fast. And I released it. And I was like, you know, it's kind of bullet pointed. The layout's not that good. The rules are kind of like that. The only cool thing is that like it kind of looks okay. And then it went out, and then people were like, oh my God, it's a game where you can make a sandwich. It's like, that's so cool. Like, let's retweet this. Let's buy this. And I was like, okay.
It was novel. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I also had like the funny thing behind it was that I had a week. I think right before I made the game, there was a week and a half where I was very deep in thought and doubt with myself about the game because I had the mechanics in my brain. Like, that was easy to do. But I kept on going back to the theme of the game jam about coziness. I was thinking, like, if I make a person make a sandwich, is it necessarily cozy? Because there are people out there who might not be able to afford a loaf of bread.
Mm-hmm.
Like the idea that I was trying to push coziness, but I wasn't thinking about accessibility. I wasn't thinking about, you know, class consciousness. It was a lot of like really weird philosophical questions that kept on haunting me until the point where I like wrote it down. I was like, man, like, yeah, like it's a really, really funny game about making sandwiches, but also at the same time, I'm being confronted with the fact that there are a lot of people out there who can't afford to make a sandwich nor buy a sandwich. So I kind of copped out, I kind of compromised. In the end, you can see in eating a sandwich, I think there's a small line that says that you can actually give a sandwich to somebody else. I might make that more obvious. That was one of the plans. Yeah, I wanted to make a section where it was like, you know, you can make a sandwich and give it to somebody else. And if you give it to somebody else,
charity.
Yeah, you talk about charity and you get to like, it kind of like nullifies the aspect that like people can't have sandwiches and it's all like, you know, accessibility stuff. And, you know, you give someone a sandwich, you have a very different kind of story you got to share with them. And yeah, like, you know, it kind of, at least it made me not feel too guilty, I guess. But yeah, like, it's for the process of, I think if you're going to ask about the process of making Sandwich County, it was sort of, I have a format in my brain when it comes to making games, and it kind of takes from various resources, and I kind of co-opted it for myself. I usually ask myself three questions and with one more, which is, what's your game about? How does your game push what the game is about? How do you reward it when people do what the game is about? And then the last one is, how do you make it fun? Which is important because it's very easy to make a game using those three questions. It's very hard to make a fun game using those three questions. Mm-hmm. And
right.
Yeah. And my version of it is sometimes it's not about making it fun, but how do I make it magical? Yeah. And then the other thing in my brain is, if there's anything you can always do to make sure RPG is fun and it's going to be something that's going to make a person, you know, make a person be able to roleplay and be able to get into it, make a game with this in mind. Think about the power you have, because while designing role-playing games, you have the complete power just to make someone do the dumbest, the funniest thing you can have in mind. The one thing they wouldn't think of doing, you can make them do it using a role-playing game. So, case in point, you can make people make sandwiches using a game. You know, like it's so cool that you get to do that. It's one of the really, really cool things with role-playing games. I don't think you can see in other places, which is it's something you can use. It's something you can use to encourage people to do activities they wouldn't really think of. Or you can make people do activities in, like, you know, with a new context in mind. So you're making sandwiches, but you're sort of also thinking about like Winnie the Pooh and like Ghibli movies while you're doing it, and you're gonna narrate like this trip into like another dimension called Sandwich County.
See, I think about Sangjun's like tater pig game, and just how that's just like so ridiculous.
It's so funny.
It's so good.
It's so good. Yeah. Yeah. I got in contact with Sangjun via Sandwich County. I think Sangjun messaged me or like tweeted at me and was like, hey, I have this game about tater pigs. So I was like, oh my God, yes, please.
Well, Sangjun had said during the episode that he was inspired by your work.
Yeah. 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 I was surprised by that because I was like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, cool. Like, yeah, go ahead, man. I am so in on this.
You can have a positive effect on people, like through your design. Cause like that's how I knew. I was like, oh yeah. Like, aside from your social media, Ben is clearly having a pretty profound effect on people.
Yeah. And it sounds like you sort of really feel that sense of responsibility that you get with that, which is really, really cool. I really admire that.
Yeah. Cool. Do you have any other questions, Amar? I noticed you've got like notes.
Oh no, I was just writing down the questions because that was just a game designer's masterclass that I got right there.
Oh yeah, right? Mars is like, oh well, I work on my game. Let me think about this.
So yeah, what is this game about? How does the game push that? How does the game reward that behavior? And last but certainly not the least, most important, the least important, is it fun? Did I get those right?
Yeah, and I think I always add that caveat of like, should you be making this game? That's mm-hmm. like kind of what Agatha and I talk about all the time. And it's like, should you be making this game? Yes. If yes, the answer, if like, how do I rephrase? When we talked about Orientalism, mm-hmm. that was one of the questions that like kept coming up. Should I be making this game? Should I be playing this game? Everybody should be playing all games, mm-hmm. but maybe not making them without the help of certain people.
If we're going to talk about cultural appropriation, Orientalism, how white people specifically look at our culture, I'm all for it. I have words. I have a lot. Yeah.
Let's get into it. I want to hear your thoughts.
Asian perspective. Where do we start? Right? Because there's so much, honestly. Like,
well, what's your perspective like on that living in Southeast Asia? Because there is the sort of colonial history there too.
Mm-hmm. For me personally, I don't like it. None of us like it. None of us mm-hmm. like the idea that like, you know, to like let a person just co-opt our culture and like do whatever they want with it without consulting. Like that's just bad. That's just terrible. Yeah. Right. Like I could go on about all the reasons of why it's bad, but mm-hmm. I don't need to justify why you shouldn't use my culture for commercialization if you're not part of the culture and you don't want to be part of culture. I don't even give you the reason. Like, that is the reason. It's just bad. Don't do it. No one's going to like it.
Yeah.
Like,
there's the answer.
No one's going to like it. You know, no one's going to like it. It's the reason why you're doing it. Like, don't, you know, like, unless you're going to get a consultant, unless you're going to really research it, unless you're really going to immerse yourself in the idea of the culture and what the culture means. And if you do, you have to also admit that you wouldn't get the full view. You wouldn't be able to fully represent it unless you live your life, you know, fully into it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, what do you say to the people who are like, oh, I spent my senior year abroad in Japan?
I mean, I went to Japan for 30 days. I'm not going to be able to claim that I know Japanese history compared to people who have done it their whole lives, you know? Cool, you spent your senior year in Japan. Cool, you're going to come back and make, a Japanese-inspired game. Cool, so tell me, what's your game going to be about? Oh, Samurai, right? Because your 1 year abroad in Japan only taught you about tropes. You were there with your own bias. It just confirmed your bias. You weren't there facing all aspects of Japanese life. You won't be able to see everything. Like, it will not work. And like that's one part, you know, like that's easy to, I think that's very easy to dissect. When you meet a person like that, you can just easily tell them, it's like, hey man, like, I know you really want to make this game about, you know, Japanese samurais. I know you've been to Japan. I know you love the culture. I know you're very inspired by it. And that's great. But unless you get a consultant, please be very, very aware it's not going to work, because you're not going to get that perspective that tells you, hey man, I think you're kind of doing something wrong here, because your 1 year is, not going to be compatible with like my life in Japan. Like, I'm you know, like a Japanese person, right? But that's easy to diffuse. That's very easy to educate. And if they say no, well, I can't do much. I give my piece and I'll just tell them, hey, when you're going to put this out there, I'm going to tell you this right now, you're not going to feel good. No one's going to feel good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you're just not going to act with your dollar. That's the way you ultimately can do it. And one of the things that we have to do is educate people on also practicing that.
Yeah.
Or, you know, acting with your dollar in a wiser way.
Yeah. I think the worst possible situation you walk into, especially as an Asian person, any person from any culture that is outside of the mainstream kind of like, you know, like white nationalities, I guess, the best way to say it. It's when you meet a person who not only has an academic background, the culture, and is not part of the culture. So like, say a white academic who is, you know, in Asian social studies, or Southeast Asian policy studies, you know, like they're studying it. And then they meet a person who has lived in Malaysia, say 20 years. And then they come in with this high and mighty kind of like tone and they say, do you know anything about your history of Southeast Asian policies? You don't, so you can't consult me because I study your culture more than you did. And it's so debasing and patronizing, the idea that you can be the herald of somebody else's culture just because they didn't read their history books more. Like, come on, right?
Thank you so much for saying that.
God, I hate it. I freaking hate it. It boils my blood thinking about it. But like we have so many examples. But one of the most popular ones that came up was I'm not gonna say their name because they don't deserve it. It was this random white guy who was a professor, I think somewhere in America. He talked about ranking the Southeast Asian cuisines by countries, and it was like, oh, this one's number one, that one's number two, that one's number three, right? And I can so easily simulate what kind of thinking process the guy went through. Southeast Asians always compare themselves to each other to see whose food is better, so I can do something cheeky and weigh in, right? And it's like, No, it's not. You don't understand what the point of the argument is. If it is, you're literally a white guy pitting all of us against each other. Like, you not understand. You, like, the guy literally studied Southeast Asian policies. This was a person.
I'm in it.
But like, he was a guy who studied Southeast Asian culture and Southeast Asian policies. He was a professor. He was on like multiple boards about this stuff. And he came in and didn't realize it looked like, I am a white man here to judge every single country that was formerly colonized and to say who is better as in cooking their local cuisines without accounting for A, their ethnicities and their different, you know, small areas of cultures that produce different foods within each country. But also, this is an objective list.
Wow.
It was so ridiculous. Like, why? Why would you do that? What was the point?
You want to hear something even worse? Or not? Mm-hmm. I don't want to compare. You want to hear something that's also pretty bad?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to give them publicity, so I won't. There's a restaurant that opened up in like New York City.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about already.
You know which one I'm talking about?
We all know. I haven't seen this yet.
Okay. Yeah. So there was a restaurant that opened up, and it was a Chinese restaurant opened up by a white woman who basically said that she was going to open a clean Chinese restaurant that won't have oily or salty food.
Oof.
So like she basically said, I'm going to open a Chinese restaurant. We're going to serve Chinese dishes, but they're going to be alternatives. To this other stuff,
right?
And like that gets me so mad.
Gets me so mad.
Right? And I think that's interesting how we, you know, can talk about food, but these same issues that we're talking about when it comes to food applies to what's going on in gaming.
Oh, totally. Totally.
But I think more people are willing to act on food
because
food is something, you know, we consume all the time.
Yes.
And whereas games are something that, you know,
100% of humans consume food in some form or another.
And certainly not that high a percentage of humans play tabletop role-playing games. Right, maybe more play games if you want to define it more broadly. Everybody plays games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, but tabletop role-playing games, a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and so, I don't know, it's always refreshing to A, talk about food, because I did not expect us to be able to talk about food on this podcast.
Oh, are you hungry, Daniel?
No, you know what? I ate dinner just before we started this.
Oh,
okay.
Oh yeah, it's night over there. I keep forgetting it's night over there.
Yeah, I finished work and then I drove home. Mm-hmm. I got home. I uploaded last month's episode to like the website.
Yep.
And then, you know, got right into getting ready to record mode.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. But like, we're running out of time, Ben, and we are already set on doing another episode. We're gonna play Magic Swords.
Cool. Yes.
Maybe, you know what? Maybe we'll let the audience decide which of your games we should play.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll do that.
Maybe we should do that, and just Amara and I are just here making sandwiches.
we could just do like international sandwich counting. We'll all make sandwiches together.
You know, that might actually be really fun.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what? If you listen to this episode, this is what I need you to do. I need you to go to swords-and-flowers.itch.io. I want you to look at all of Ben's amazing games, and I want you to let us know which one you want us to play. If you want us to make sandwiches together and talk about making sandwiches, we'll do that. We'll play Sandwich County, and the three of us, if we can get Agatha and Jade in, five of us will sit and make sandwiches together. And you will have to listen to us eat them at the end of the episode.
It'll just be 15 minutes of munching.
15 minutes of munching, but just let us know, because I already have ideas for sandwiches. Now that might... Are you just flexing, Avar? Are you just like...
Oh, no, sorry.
It's all good. I thought you were just like, sandwich-making muscles.
I don't know if you know this, but I've been working out. I'm getting swole. I'm going to get so wide. I can't fit through standard doorways.
let us know on social media which game of Ben's you want us to play. So that's swords-and-flowers.itch.io. I'm also going to put the link to that in the show notes. But Ben, if people want to, get to know you, we've just told them where they can buy your games, but if they want to ask you questions online, where can they find you on the internet?
So you can find me on Swords and Flowers. That's swords, as in swords, with the letter N and then flowers. There's no A and there's no B. Swords and Flowers. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram. Those are the best places. Twitter is probably the best. You can also find me on Facebook. It's also Swords and Flowers with an A and a B. And that's pretty much it. You can just go on Twitter. Twitter is probably the best place to just annoy me. Not annoy me. You can find me on Twitter, and I'll be very nice. I promise. I'm very nice. I post a lot of selfies there.
post a lot of selfies.
Yeah, your Twitter game is on point.
It is on point.
Thanks.
So that's Twitter at SwordsNFlowers.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for being on the show. This was an absolute joy. Thank you for sharing your design insight. But also, thank you for commiserating with us about some of the issues that we face.
thank you so much. It's just very nice to be together with people and just complain about the same things, honestly.
Complain, but then be constructive at the same time.
Yeah, be constructive and complain. It's learning from each other. It's a cultural exchange.
Yes, and speaking of cultural exchange, maybe one day in the future we will all be able to be physically in the same space.
Yeah,
share a meal.
Yes,
and talk about games.
That'd be amazing.
If you come over to Malaysia, I guarantee you Singaporeans and Filipinos and all of Malaysia's creative group, we'll come together. We can have a yamcha session. We'll just drink tea together. We'll just eat food, eat really really good food, and we're just gonna have a heck of time.
Oh, my mouth is already watering.
Oh, my God. Okay, we're going to have to find a convention.
We should take Asians Represent on the road. That's what we should do.
Yeah, we should.
Yes. Right. Yes.
We should. So, if you're a convention out there in Asia and you would like to do an Asians Represent live show, just get in touch with us. But, Ben, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me as well.